Grimagath, Eileen, you're welcome back to the Late Debate with Cormac O'Hara standing in for Audrey this evening. Tonight, we're going to discuss an issue that has touched almost every family in the country. Immigration has left its mark throughout the country. We'll discuss the challenges faced by those who leave the country, willingly or not, their support networks, and what the state has done to aid its citizens abroad. You can contact the programme this evening by text 51551. You can contact us also on email, latedebate@rte.ie, and you can follow and contact the programme on Twitter, latedebate.rte. We'll have panels in the USA, in the UK, here in Dublin, and we'll discuss all aspects of immigration. But first of all, I want to talk to Sue Byrne, who is an undocumented Irish immigrant in Florida in the USA. You're welcome to the programme, Sue. Tell me about your story. You're one of 50,000 undocumented Irish or so in the US. Tell me about your story. How have you found yourself in this position?
Good evening, Cormac. Yes, I've been in the US since 1999. I came here of my own free will, to come to be with my partner. I haven't been back home since 2001, pre-9/11. And right now I'm here, I'm undocumented. I'm a non-person, I suppose, in the US.
And what does that mean? What does that mean when you say you're a non-person in the US? How does that manifest itself to you?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things you take for granted. One would be the privileges of driving, which, you know, I cannot get a driver's license. And as such, then I cannot get a bank account. I can't get medical insurance. There's a whole host of other activities and services that require identification that, you know, I just can't avail of.
So no rights, no social security, no driver's license, no bank account. How do you function?
You just get up every day, Cormac, and you keep on going. And, you know, you live in hope that, you know, this administration, they're going to follow through on their promise, you know, that something will be done to fix the immigration situation in the U.S.
You say you live in hope, but do you live in fear?
Of course you do. Of course you do. You know, obviously in America, it's very hard to get around without using a car. I do use a car, but, you know, you're always looking over your shoulder, you know.
And what happens, you were telling a researcher earlier on, if you're pulled over by the police, if your car has a faulty light or so, that you're really fearful at that stage.
Of course you are, yeah. I mean, you can do some quick talking, but if you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, then, you know, you do run the risk of deportation. For me, I've been here for almost 16 years. I have a life established. I have property. So what happens if I get deported? Then everything I worked for 15, 16 years, it's gone.
And some people, if they were talking to you, Sue, they would say, why don't you chance it? Why don't you come back to Ireland and chance it? You probably will get back in again.
Well, it's a lot to lose, you know. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd love to be back. I'd miss my family dreadfully. You know, I'd miss nieces, nephews growing up, missed weddings and funerals and births and, you know, just miss the family. But it's, like I say, I've established a life here. I can't afford to throw it all away, you know.
And what would you say to people who would have little pity for you and would say, you have gone of your own free will to America, you have built your life there, and you have done so illegally. You have a choice to come home if you really wanted to. What would you say to those people?
I would say I'm not asking for your pity, you know. I know full well I've put myself in this position, you know. Yes, I can go home in the morning if I so chose, but what would I be going home to? You know, what sort of unemployment would I find? You know, the Irish economic situation isn't anything that
you know, you would be rushing back for.
Stay with me, Sue, if you don't mind. I have Anne Byrne sure. on the line as well. Anne, you were in America. You came home during the boom and you had to leave again. You have been through the ringer. Tell me about your story.
Hi, Cormac. How are you? My story started in 1987 when I came out to Boston. Met my husband here, got married. I was undocumented, which was nothing at the time in those days. I mean, you could get a driver's license, all that sort of thing. My son was born here, and we went home, and he was a few weeks old. That was in 1990. That was before the boom.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided to go home simply for the fact I had a young child. I hadn't a huge family here, you know. So we went home and we stayed at home for 22 years. My son turned 21 and decided to emigrate. So he came back to Boston. 6 months later, we decided we were going to follow him.
Why?
Because due to the economic climate at home, my husband was a plaster, ran his own business for 15 years, and had very, very little work. I worked in real estate. I went from working 6 days a week to 3 days a week. We just couldn't continue. We felt we couldn't continue. We were living off our savings. My son was able to claim us in. So we actually came here illegally. We entered the country illegally. We became undocumented for a number of months, and we then got our authorization, our work authorization. And 6 months later, last May, we got our green cards.
So basically, your son, who was a citizen, helped you get mm-hmm. into the States. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yes, they do have a... they do keep families together. The United States Immigration do keep families together. We have one son. He came out here, so he was able to automatically claim that we weren't even interviewed by the immigration authorities here.
So you have...
It's practically automatic.
And you have a green card now. It must be much easier yes. for you compared to your experience when you were undocumented.
Yes, it is. I can go home. That's the big deal for me. Mm. Myself and my husband can travel now. Because even travelling in the United States isn't guaranteed without documentation.
You feel let down by the government, the Irish government. Why is that?
I do feel let down by the Irish government. My husband worked himself for 15 years, paid his taxes on time, all the time. He employed people. And when he ran out of work, he wasn't entitled to anything. Yet the guys that worked for him could get unemployment assistance.
Mm.
I was entitled to stamps for X amount of months after working 22 years.
You feel it's unfair?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, the system is wrong to me.
Okay.
The system is wrong.
Can I ask both Anne and Sue before I turn to Chaftadola, Pat Breen? Every time this year, when the Taoiseach goes to St. Patrick's Day and has access to the White House, and as meetings with Barack Obama or whichever president, there's always talk of immigration reform. There's always talk of an amnesty for the undocumented Irish. What do you make of those? This hopeful period?
Well, right now at the moment here, I am a volunteer with the Irish Pastoral Centre here in Boston. They do Trojan work for all nationalities. Without them, I wouldn't have my green card, basically. They gave us the advice, they helped us out. They do fantastic work here. And we have been working on a phone bank where we are making calls day after day after day, week after week, to the state representatives all over the United States.
But what about help from the Irish state?
Reform for the undocumented.
Okay, but what about help from the Irish government? What about Irish representatives, the Taoiseach, going to Washington, meeting with the president, raising the issue of the Irish undocumented? Does that bring you hope?
Yes, it does. But they need to keep the pressure on the American government. They need to keep the pressure on Obama.
And you're saying that's not happening?
And on the House and on the State of Representatives, they need to keep it up because there's 50,000 at least. That's an estimate. There's at least 7 in Boston alone.
Mm-hmm.
And they're young men, young women, and people my age group. There are people now back who gave up their green cards and they have now come back.
Sue, are you hopeful?
Well, you know, I just can't see Barack Obama saying, "Asher, you're Irish, come on in." You know, there's 11 million estimated people in the US that are undocumented, albeit 50,000 of them that are Irish. But, you know, I just see the Taoiseach arriving at the White House, a big bucket of shamrocks, him and Obama having a drink of a flat pint of Guinness and smiling, shaking hands and a wink of congratulations to each other. But I don't really see that their politics is going to change undocumented immigrants, their situation, you know.
Mm.
There's too much politics between Republicans and Democrats for them to ever come to an agreement on this.
Okay. Well,
will the Irish Taoiseach change anything? No, I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
Let me raise that point with Pat Breen of Fine Gael, who's chairman of the Oireachtas Committee on Foreign Affairs and Trade and who's in Washington at the moment. You can text us, by the way, on 51551. Pat Breen, it may bring hope to some, but politics, in all likelihood, will not change, despite access to the White House and to Barack Obama, will not change much for the Irish undocumented in the USA.
No, I think Cormac did well, actually. We spent with the Taoiseach for the next 2 days in Washington. And as you know, the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Foreign Affairs and Trade have taken a very special interest in immigration reform for the 50,000 undocumented Irish. In fact, last October, we travelled out there, an all-party group, which I led, and met 15 key congressmen in relation to this. And at the time, we saw a window of opportunity in relation to immigration reform. The U.S. Senate had just passed a bill, and obviously the House was in the process of trying to put a bill together as well. That didn't happen for a number of reasons. It didn't happen because, as Sue and Anne said, politics took place, it's like everywhere else. Politics between the Republicans and the Democrats. And there was a window of opportunity, we thought, just before Thanksgiving. But, of course, Obamacare dominated politics in the U.S. at that time, still is dominating politics. But let me give hope to Sue and Anne here and to the other undocumented Irish. You know, we all, I suppose it affects everybody, everybody in Ireland, every parish in Ireland. And we've all heard the stories of young people that can't come home to loved ones' funerals. In fact, there's a funeral undertaker in County Clare that has a camera and internet installed in his funeral parlour for those people that can't come home if the mother or father or someone dies. So today, Cormac, we spent the full day in Capitol Hill today. I was with the Taoiseach for all the meetings, and I can assure you, the Taoiseach, this was very high in the Taoiseach's agenda. It was the first question we put to the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Congressman Bob Goodlett, and to Paul Ryan, and to the Irish Friendly Group as well, led by Peter King.
Pat, but with all due respect, you did the same thing last year, and we've had very little progress.
What's happened at the moment, Cormac, is that it has stalled. It's not gone off the agenda. I can assure you it's not gone off the agenda.
Yeah, but your point initially that Irish political lobbying will make a difference, you've already...
I think it will, yeah.
How will it? Already admitted that domestic politics within the US is thwarting all efforts from this side.
Well, despite the fact that we still have influence in Washington, you know, over the next few days, the Taoiseach has access to President Obama tomorrow, and he will be raising the issue with President Obama. And, you know, the problem, as I said, is politics. There are elections coming up this year. You have the November mid-year elections, midterm elections coming up. And obviously it suits the Republicans to keep Obamacare still on the political agenda. But, you know, I was reassured today by many of the Republicans that we met, including Congressman Paul Ryan, that the Republicans are very anxious to get immigration reform through.
Were you given any assurance?
I believe it will come through.
You were reassured, but that's were you given any any assurance?
It will come through because the momentum is with Republicans at the moment. You know, the Irish make up about 50,000 of the 11 million undocumented immigrants in the US at the moment. And obviously, I mean, what's going to happen here, and this was conveyed to us by most of the key Republican congressmen we had today, it'll be a piece-by-piece document that will go through the House, and it will come sometime possibly before the end of the year or in early 2015. I mean, the Republicans are very anxious, Cormac, to get immigration reform through, particularly before the 2016 presidential election. Now, I don't think what will happen here is probably more than likely it will be legalisation. I don't see the path for citizenship happen in relation to reform. But I think that would, you know, satisfy most of the undocumented Irish people here, people that could, the Irish, undocumented Irish, that would pay their taxes, be able to get their driving licence, be able to go back and forth from Ireland, all that type of thing. And that, I think that will happen. I'm confident it will happen.
But are you, and, Pat, you know, are you simply giving false hope to Irish immigrants in the USA? Because the fact of the matter is that US immigration is a multicultural, multi-ethnic problem which requires a very, very broad and detailed response, which will require time. And Irish politicians around St. Patrick's Day in Washington making sounds like you're making now is simply giving false hope to people living in fear.
No, we haven't been making reforms just now. We've been at this, and the Taoiseach has been out. The Irish government have been lobbying key congressmen here over the last number of years in relation to this. And, you know, there have been, a number of proposals made here. The US federal budget proposals announced last week. The whole idea here is to try and protect the border between Mexico and the US. And the federal budget, they've announced that they'll put 2,000 extra customs and border protection officers in place there. They're going to put a system in place. But, you know, from all our meetings today and from the Taoiseach's comments at the meetings, I'm satisfied that as the momentum, as I said, is with the Republicans at the moment. There was an election in Florida yesterday caused by the vacancy of the death of a Democrat congressman. The Republicans won that. So I think the Republicans are of the opinion that they may take control of the Senate in November, and if they do so, obviously they will be able to bring legislation.
You feel you can make progress.
Quicker.
Sue Byrne in Florida, are you encouraged by what Pat Breen is saying of Fine Gael?
I have to say, with all due respect, no, I'm not at all encouraged by what he said. You know, he said, we've been lobbying the US government for years. You know, in fairness, they spent a lot of time with it this week or whatever. But I, like I said, I really can't see it changing anything for the Irish people. They're not going to pick a small section. With regards to immigration on the whole for 11 million people, the Republicans and the Democrats have to sit down and bury party politics for this to happen. You know, right now, from my perspective, it just looks like, you know, they're each waiting for the other to fail so that they can champion a cause rather than jointly champion it and saying, let's get on with it. We have 11 million people here that are living inhumanely. Let's do something for these people.
Anne Byrne?
Well, in my opinion, I'm hoping the Irish government will do something. This has been going on for years. This has been going on for years and years. But the more lobbying we do, and it's not just for the Irish, and as Pat said, it's not a path to citizenship. The American government intend to secure the border and then deal with the illegals in the country. It's not a guarantee. There will be very strict criteria.
Mm.
And you will have to meet that. You will have to pay your taxes. You will be fined. But at least you will be able to travel. You will be able to go home, get a driver's license.
Okay.
And if that opportunity, that would That's all we, the Irish, any of the Irish that I know, that's all they want.
Okay, stay with me, and Pat Breen, stay with me as well if you don't mind. You can text us 51551. Anne in Wexford says, why didn't the undocumented apply for green cards or visas? Plenty of others did, and living, working and travelling openly, she says. Hugh in Selbridge says, hi Cormac, spare a thought for the undocumented living in direct provision in Ireland. No Irish politicians cares about them, he says, and we'll touch on that later in the programme. I'm joined now by Skype, I think, later on in the programme. OK, I'll go to, at this stage, our guests in studio here, Alan Hilliard, he's a chaplain in the DIT, and Joe O'Brien, policy officer with Crosscare. Alan, you've been listening to Pat Breen, Fine Gael TD, and our Irish abroad there in the USA. This is a tough nut to crack, isn't it? Because it is a multidimensional problem.
It's a very tough nut, and let's not underestimate it, because we're talking about America, but it's a global problem. There's 3.8 million undocumented people in Europe. There's 30,000 in Ireland. And one of the reasons it's gone politically stale is that every time the government lobby on behalf of the Irish in America, people raise the issue of the undocumented here in Ireland, and nobody's joined the dots. It's a global problem. It's interesting as foreign affairs and trade, because there's free movement of trade. There's no free movement of people. And I know I walk the corridors of the House of Representatives. Talking to the Friends of the Irish is like backing the favourites in Cheltenham.
Why?
Because if you go into the House of Representatives, you have to meet the people who are saying no. You have to meet the people who are hard and fast, and they think that undocumented should be thrown out of the country. Do you know in the last 10 years, more people have been deported from the United States than in its previous 100 years of history?
But is that opinion, is that line of thought receding now as they come to grips with the fact that actually this is a major problem that we have to deal with, and possibly the American economy couldn't function without undocumented workers?
Well, I was just reading from a conference that was done this week. There's only 5,000 permanent visas granted in the United States every year, and something like 17,000 temporary visas. But in the United States, and this is the same in countries throughout the world, they want workers. So, you know, the interesting about undocumented workers, if there's no work, they move on if they can. They're there to work. Somebody's employing them, but they're not actually giving them the legal means by which to get employment. I know from the House of Representatives, I used to say to guys from Georgia, who's picking your peanuts? You know, that's what it comes down to, that nobody will pick their crops if there's not undocumented workers to do it. Now, they put the contractor in the middle. I went to a play, The Grapes of Wrath, which was set in the 1930s America, where contractors exploited people as well. The same thing is going on. There's a toleration of unjust practices and people suffer.
I'll come to Joe in just a moment, but Siobhan Dennehy, the executive director of the Emerald Isle Immigration Centre, joins us now by phone. One of our texters said, Siobhan, why didn't you apply for a green card or a visa? It's as simple as that. Many other people did it. You can then live, work and travel. It's not that simple, though, is it?
No, good evening, and certainly thank you for focusing all of the attention that you are focusing on this issue. It isn't that easy. Formerly, in the past, there were far more avenues available to people to apply. Now we're down to literally working on a case-by-case basis that we're actually getting people to apply for green cards and get them in. It's a very complicated business. There's mounds and mounds and mounds of information. It's very complicated how people actually apply for a green card. There's a DV lottery every year. There's small opportunity on the H-1B program, but it's nothing like the perception of what people think. And certainly people here in America also think that it's a lot easier than it is, and it is a very difficult road.
Siobhan, there's a perception here that the Irish are looked upon favourably in the United States, and an Irish green card application would certainly be looked upon favourably. That's not the case at all, is it, to any extent?
No, the Irish undocumented are you know, within a pool of an estimated 11 million. That number could be higher. Some think it could be lower. I tend to think it's probably higher. And within that, we have an estimate that there's 50,000 undocumented there. And there is, in certain states, there is huge support for the issue. New York is one of those states that would gladly see immigration reform passed. and that there would be a place and our labour market, which feeds into this. There would also be work there for everybody who would be looking for it, despite some challenges in the workforce. And that's one of the things that I think has probably delayed Congress from looking at this decision even more closely. If the job market here were a little better, we may have a better opportunity for more urgent reform. But it's been on the cards for years and years and years.
You say if you're illegal, you drop off the map in America. What do you mean?
You're living a life under the radar, and the perception is that everybody thinks that you're legal. If you're Irish, you assimilate well into the community, and certainly the clients that we would serve in New York, there's this just natural kind of perception that you're already documented, but you're living your life a total secret shadow. You're not able necessarily to get the job that everybody else is able to get to. You're not able to bank, perhaps, with the same ease as other people. You're not able to drive. Driving without your driver's license or with an expired driver's license now is so risky.
Okay, I'll come back to you in a second. The line is relatively bad, so we'll try and get a better line. But I'll come to Joe O'Brien, who's policy officer with CrossCare. You deal with immigrants in many countries. But the American question, first of all, is there do people, especially undocumented Irish in the USA, at this time of year when the Taoiseach meets the president of the US, is there an increase in the level of hope that something would be done, or are people very practical and very realistic?
Just to explain a little bit about who we are and where we're coming from, we're an information advocacy project for intending Irish immigrants, but also Irish people thinking of returning home. Mm-hmm. And we have a drop-in service in our website, migrantproject.ie, would have a lot of relevant information for people thinking of emigrating. I suppose when you discuss America, what I think of really is the queries that come into us over recent years. And what happens an awful lot is that there's a lot of graduates, they're coming out of college, there's no work for them here, and they're looking at their options abroad. And invariably, they're quite surprised at the fact that America is not really an option for them. And I suppose in terms of a change in migration pattern, particularly over the last 10 years or so, the flow is certainly changing from going in the direction of the US to Canada and Australia. And something extraordinary happened tonight in relation to Canada, which I might say a little bit about later. But in terms of your question, in terms of hope, yes, I'm sure it does. But I think, you've hit the nail on the head. You could play the tape from the meetings over the last 10 years between Irish politicians and the different presidents. The faces are different. The words are probably very much the same. And it's as deadlocked as it was, really. You try to find a glimmer of hope. You try to look at the elections like the deputy did, and things might change then. But there's a little bit of really grasping at straws.
Okay, we'll talk about Canada in just a second and the visas that you mentioned there. I mentioned it at the very top of the programme. But some people in the country will listen to you say that for people now intending to emigrate from Ireland, the US is no longer an option. Why is that?
Well, I suppose if we're looking at the people who are looking at emigrating at the moment, it is young people. They're in the 20 to 35 age bracket generally. And they look at all their various options. And what we would do a lot of time when people contact us, we'd lay out all their options for them. And working holiday visas in general are the most accessible type of visa for that particular category of person as well. There is a type of visa to the USA, intern work and travel visa. It's extremely, bogged down in administrative procedures. There's two interviews. You need a sponsoring agency. You need an employer. It's really quite complicated. The numbers that are actually going on it every year are quite small, only several hundred. Then we explain to them what working holiday visas to Canada and Australia are like, and they're so much more straightforward. And you can see, the numbers tell the story. There's many, many thousands of people going to Australia and Canada and only a couple of hundred to the US.
And tell me, I mentioned it very briefly at the top of the programme, but tell me about the issuance of Canadian visas this evening at 8 o'clock and how quickly they were snapped up.
Yeah, well, every year around January, usually, several thousand Canadian working holiday visas are issued to Irish people. And last year, there were 6,350. I remember at the time I was working on the issue at the time, and it disappeared in a matter of days. And we were astounded that they went so quickly. We knew at the time that this year there was going to be 10,700 allocated, a record number for Irish people. We've been waiting and waiting, and last week the news came that they were going to, the allocation process was going to open tonight, 8 p.m. They broke the allocations down into two separate sections, so there's 3,850 tonight and 3,850 at a time in the future, which we suspect will be a few weeks' time. 8 p.m. was the opening time. I checked my laptop at home at a minute to eight. 3,850 were there. I went back to it at 8:15. They were all gone.
All of them?
All of them gone.
Are you surprised by that, Alan?
No, because Canada is certainly a country of opportunity. And I know a lot of lobbying has been done by the ambassador over there on behalf of the Irish to open doors. And also, to be very honest about it, the west of Canada needs to be populated.
By Irish?
Well, a lot of people I'm speaking to are actually going out to the wilderness because it really wants to open up the country. But what Joe is saying is true about the temporary visa. See, this is a country's way of attracting people in, and then they hold on to the good ones. They sponsor them. It's like an apprenticeship to the country. And the belief is that at the end of 2 or 3 years, if you haven't got sponsored, well, really, you're not up to much and you might as well go home. So that's why the temporary visa idea there is encouraged.
So we educate them in this country, they graduate, then the brain drain happens and then we lose them. Is that right?
My cousin has 8 children, God bless her. One born last week, and her 18-year-old wants to go abroad next year. He says, is this what I'm raring for?
Pat Breen, what do you say to that? Is that simply a fact of life? Or are you surprised by what you're hearing? 4,000 visas to Canada
in
15 minutes.
Not surprised at all, Cormac. And already in my own email, I'm picking them up here in the US at the moment. I've had a number of constituents on to be on the Canadian visa situation, and they have applied as well for it. Canada has a lot to offer. It's obviously easier with 10,000 visas this year. And but, you know, people traditionally like to go to the English-speaking countries like the UK, Australia, and the US. And Canada does have advantages, but it has disadvantages as well for many Irish people.
Is it an indictment of the Irish state and Irish economic policy, though?
No, it's not an indictment of that. I mean, you've seen the success of Connect Ireland and the various schemes that the government have put into place to attract people back home again. And, you know, we saw a lot of people home last Christmas from places like Australia, and people, you know, some people stayed around. Obviously, you know, it is very difficult for young people that are forced to immigrate. But, I mean, if we can fix the problem, like this is the whole idea of what the immigration problem we have in the US at the moment. Congress knows well that the immigration system in the US is broken and that the laws are not being enforced, and that's why there's a resolution here now to try and fix the system. And I believe that congressmen and senators realize that because
okay.
It is jeopardizing the national security and jeopardizing the economy.
Pat, both Alan Hilliard and Joe O'Brien want to come in, I think, on points you've made. But Alan?
Well, Pat, just to clarify something, the highest number of immigrants according to CSO in April 2012 were to the EU, 25,700. And that's not counting the UK, and they're non-English speaking countries. And I think people, from what I find from Pirish McHenry's research on immigrants done last year, most people who are emigrating are people who are working. That they feel they're working hard and they're not getting anything back for it. And the one thing you find out from people you talk to in America and Australia is they feel they have disposable income in their back pocket, that even after paying all the bills, they can still enjoy life. That certainly, and I suppose Pope Francis said it, immigrants travel, people migrate because they want to be more, not that what they have more, but they want to be more.
Colm?
Just to put a bit of context in this in terms of the last 5 years, between April 2009 and April 2013, there was 180,000 Irish people left the country. 51,000 of them were last year. And also, just to put this in a historical context as well, this year is likely going to be a record year in terms of the number of Irish people going to Canada. You'd have to go back to the 1800s to find more Irish people going to Canada in any one year if the current pattern continues. And it's certainly at the speed they went tonight, that's the way it's going to go. These aren't records we want to be breaking, you know, and it's pretty serious.
Okay, sorry, I know it's Joe, I know I called you Colm. I want to get back to Siobhan Dennehy, who's the Executive Director of the Emerald Isle Immigration Centre. Do you get much support in your centre, Siobhan, from the Irish state?
Yes, we do. We're funded as our Many of the local Irish immigration centres in the US and were funded through the Department of Foreign Affairs through the Immigrant Support Programme.
And the people you meet then, the people who come to you with grievances, like I think Sue Byrne, who said to us at the very top of the programme, she feels somewhat let down by the Irish state. Do you get that sentiment, or are people generally happy that the Irish state is doing as much as possible?
Well, I think there's genuine frustration out there. It's not directed to us when people come in looking for an answer that they turn to the Irish government and are upset there. They're more upset about their own situation and that there isn't more of a solution, that politics has taken over their lives and that's what's causing the delay to their lives being changed. They'd love to be in a position to travel home, to maybe work in a different job. Many are working in jobs that, while they're living paycheck to paycheck, and could possibly offer more to the United States.
Alan?
Siobhan, lovely to talk to you again. Just one point that's worth mentioning, I think, that we talk about support to Irish immigrants. It is good. It has improved greatly. But do you know when most developments were made in policy for Irish immigrants? When emigration was at its lowest in our boom time, 2003, 2004, Brian Cowan, as Minister for Foreign Affairs, launched the task force and responded to it. But that was on the behest of the Harvey Report, which was done by the Bishop's Council for Migrants. So, in other words, we can't talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. And it's only when it's not there that we can actually put policy in place about it.
OK. Well, we'll discuss emigration further in the second part of the programme. But at this stage, my thanks to Siobhan Dennehy, Executive Director of the Emerald Isles Immigration Centre, to Fine Gael TD Pat Breen, who's with us from Washington, from Irish Immigrants in America, Sue Byrne and Anne Byrne, and Joe O'Brien, Policy Officer of Crosscare, and Father Alan Hilliard, a member of the board of the Irish Bishops Council for Immigrants, are staying with us. We have a column just now, but a number of your texts and tweets. Gary says to us, we call them illegal immigrants at home, but undocumented when our own are abroad. The double standard is mind-boggling, he says. Another texter says, if the US were serious about deporting the undocumented Irish, they could raid the pubs and building sites, but they never do. Why don't they reward them with visas if they can show they have been working for X number of years? You can text us 51551 after the break. We'll switch our attention to the UK. But first of all, our weekly column, and it's time for our resident columnist, Colm O'Regan, and he has sent us this postcard from New York.
I'm here in the Irish Arts Centre in New York for a couple of gigs. It's a bit like when the government ministers go abroad for Patrick's Day to the emigrants. Then the comedians of the country have to head off as well to keep an eye on the ministers. I've never had to emigrate. I graduated in the year 2000 from a civil engineering class that could all have gotten work within a stone's throw of their own house if they wanted to. This was a far cry from a decade earlier, when practically the entire class was hired to build Canary Wharf, or a decade later, when they all had to head away once more. There are rituals around emigration in the media. There's the Christmas welcome home at the airport, the January goodbye at the airport, the interviews on Fifth Avenue on Paddy's Day. I have cousins possibly numbering in the hundreds here in the United States, but I was a bit blasé about emigration. And then yesterday I called into the New York Public Library. It's a beautiful building located at the junction of 42nd Street and Fifth Avenue. I wandered into the genealogy and local history department. It's not a place that you would associate with idle browsing. Shelf after shelf is covered in the proceeds of historical societies' meetings. But if you go a little deeper into the room, you see the books of emigrants. I don't mean the books written by emigrants or the stories of emigrants, just books that list thousands and thousands of emigrants of all nationalities, and especially Irish. Books like the passenger shipping lists from the early 1800s, or the list of 5,000 bank accounts held at the Irish Emigrant Industrial Savings Bank. Name after name after name, almost shocking in its mundanity. No stories, just the bare details, just the names. The Francis family, labourers, who left Sligo in 1803 on a ship called the Quantibé Cook. Mary Esther O'Regan, a widowed dressmaker from Mallow, who opened bank account number 6337 in 1846. It's impossible not to be stunned by the scale. Then I went to the New York Irish Centre as the senior citizens were celebrating their St. Patrick's Day lunch. Most of these people came over decades ago. There was Joe Taylor from Leitrim, who's been in the United States since 1959. He told me snippets of stories of his life here and back home. It turned out that he had lived once on the road that I now live on in Inchicore. We both agreed that this was, in inverted commas, a good one. The director of the centre pointed out some of the other people. So-and-so was a butcher. He or she worked in Port Authority. He was a postman. She was a nurse. And it got me thinking that every one of these lines in the books and the passenger lists and the bank accounts was a story. The new emigrant stories are being told on Facebook or in Skype calls. There are thousands who left during the perma-recession of a few decades ago whose stories should be told. And for the undocumented, they should be more than just a line on an airplane passenger list.
And that's Colm O'Regan getting in touch with his roots in New York there. We'll discuss emigration to the UK after the break. You can text us on 51551.
Text Late Debate on 51551.
You're welcome back to the Late Debate. It's Cormac O'Hara in for Audrey Carville this evening. I'm joined in studio by Father Alan Hilliard, a member of the board of the Irish Bishops' Council for Emigrants, and by Joe O'Brien, policy officer with CrossCare. We're discussing the issue of immigration, which has touched every household almost in the country. We were discussing immigration to the USA and the various challenges being faced by undocumented and Irish immigrants there. We're going to switch our attention now to the challenges faced by those of us from this country who have emigrated to the UK. And I'm joined in the BBC studios by Jerry McFlynn, who works with Irish prisoners in the UK system, and also by Jenny McShannon, Chief Executive of Irish in Britain. You can text us on 51551. Jerry McFlynn, you were in Leinster House this week and you were making a very particular case. What was it?
We were presenting to the Committee of Justice and Equality the situation regarding Irish prisoners on IPP sentences, which are indeterminate public protection sentences here in the UK, and the problems faced by these prisoners in respect of being repatriated to Ireland. Many of them tick all the boxes required for repatriation, but because the Irish prison system doesn't have the equivalent sentence in Ireland, they're not able to be repatriated.
There's no sentence conversion then. There's no equivalent sentence in the Irish state. Is that right?
There isn't. That's the problem, yeah. And we're talking about a relatively small number of people. We're talking about no more than about, say, 12 to 15 Irish nationals here who are interested in repatriation to Ireland. And of that figure, probably no more than 6 or 7 would be actually probably granted repatriation.
And why is it such a big issue for these prisoners?
Well, it's a big issue for them because many of the prisoners concerned, everybody belonging to them, is back in Ireland. Some of them are serving very long tariffs here. In one case I came across recently, a 17-year tariff. He's from County Mayo. His mother is seriously ill and his father isn't in the best of health either, so there's every chance that this particular individual might never even see them again.
Were the Oireachtas Committee amenable to your case?
Well, many of them were aware of the problem, but we sort of laid it on the line for them pretty clearly and told them that it was an issue of some urgency as well. Some of these prisoners are now at the responsibility of the parole board, and they could be there indefinitely. They could be there for years in the prison system here before the parole board deems them sufficiently safe to be released. And that being the case, some of them also have partners and children back in Ireland, and some of them haven't seen their children in 2 or 3 years.
Father Alan Hilliard, you've also worked with prisoners. I'm not sure if it's in the UK or in other countries. Should this be given more attention here?
I work with the ICPO was set up over 25 years ago to provide assistance to families of prisoners, like the Birmingham 6, Guildford 4. The families were getting no support and they were heavily victimised. So what Jerry's talking about is that when a prisoner's close to a family, they get more support. Jerry would know stories of people who've arrived back from other countries on the shores of Ireland, Dublin Airport, ICPO people sent up to pick them up. They don't know what euros are. They haven't no sense of living in society again. And the best support for anybody coming out is the family support. And so that's why repatriation is so important. And I know I visited prisoners when I was in Australia, and sometimes you wear the link between the family at home and them, and that's so important to keep alive.
I'm also joined from the BBC studios in London by Jenny McShannon, as I said, Chief Executive of the Irish in Britain. Let's widen the discussion a little bit, because sometimes in this country, when we think of immigration to the UK and then problems, we think of immigrants from the 1950s, but there are still major challenges being faced by the Irish in Britain today. Isn't that right?
I think there is, Cormac, I think you're right. There's a real perception that all the migrants or immigrants who are coming over here, you know, who have come from a very different Ireland, are coming to great opportunities here. And many are, and I don't think we would want to you know, not acknowledge that. But I think it's really important that we do acknowledge that just moving country, whether by choice or because of economic reasons, doesn't bring a whole host of problems with it. And I think there's a bit of a reluctance to acknowledge that those many of those young people are finding themselves shocked at being here, shocked at the system, unaware of the system. You know, as much as someone comes back to Ireland and doesn't know about the Euros, you know, coming over, the stories of the past, coming over and getting a job and going into the Irish bar and getting a job and a flat and a lift home if you need to, that isn't the same anymore. You know, you can't walk onto a building site and get a job. You can't walk onto into a landlord and get a flat. You need a builder's card, a special card. You need to pay for that. You need qualifications. You need 4 months' rent before you can sign a tenancy agreement. You know, so there's this whole system that's very, very different for the experiences of new migrants as it was for those who came before.
Joe O'Brien, you've come across these problems in the UK as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat of a paradox, but the fact that the UK is so near us and in many respects so easy to go to, it is actually the root of a lot of the issues that we face as well, and a lot of the organisations that Jenny would work with would feed back the issues to us, and we would talk to them on a regular basis about what Irish people could be doing better. And I think the fact is, you can hop on a bus in Bosora Station in Dublin for €38 and you can go across, no ID required or anything like that. And we would have a particular focus on people in very vulnerable situations, and we would deal a lot with people who would even be accessing homeless services in Dublin. And very often, to try and improve their situation, to try and find a better life, a lot of these people would be very chaotic situations, addiction issues as well. They'll hop on the bus and go across at very little preparation, very little support, very little idea of what they're getting into. And this has been an issue for some time. They're a small cohort, but it's continuing to be a problem.
But are we being too negative on this programme? Because surely an awful lot of the immigrants to the UK now are young, highly educated, highly ambitious and very able.
Yeah, I mean, it's number one destination at the moment in terms of where Irish people are going, and has been for some time, and I think it will continue to be in the future. And in many respects, our economies are so enmeshed that it's difficult to separate them. And in fact, the labour markets are very enmeshed, and there's a piece of research done by David Ralph in UCC that indicates that a lot of people actually commute over and back to the UK on a weekly basis.
Really?
These would be highly qualified professional people as well. Yeah, very, very on a different end of the scale to the one I talk about in terms of people accessing homeless services.
How many people would commute?
It wasn't a quantitative study. We figure it's a small number, so we wouldn't have numbers. But you know, I think he interviewed 30 people, and it wasn't that difficult to find them.
Okay, I've heard of commutes from Carlow or Galway, but that seems extreme altogether. Jenny, you said something else earlier before we came on air, which was very interesting. And this is common, I would say, for all immigrants, Irish immigrants. It doesn't matter where they go to, the Irish identity becomes extremely important.
Absolutely. I think, we had a young intern over from Limerick working with us, whose sister had gone to Australia, and she said she'd never donned an Ireland shirt until she went to Sydney, and then it was the only thing on her back. I think it's really important that we acknowledge that even though we have so much that's shared here in terms of our culture and experiences, and as Joe O'Brien says, economy and the labour market is very, you know, there's great opportunity for people here, and as you're saying, there are those who are coming over and really thriving and doing very well, but there is also this side of things which is that it becomes so important to acknowledge that whilst they're here, maybe by choice, but having a great time, being in Britain, being in London, potentially, they also, it feels very important to them to be able to reconnect in and to be able to find that cultural comfort, if you like, of other Irish people. Not necessarily all the time. It's, you know, it's not the way it was in the past where it was almost out of necessity. But that people's culture and identity is really important to them.
And the GAA is very important, I assume.
The GAA is massive. It always has played a huge role, and increasingly now it's where people will go to make those connections, to hear those accents, to play the game, to watch the match. It's a great way to get introductions. But I think just talking to some of our newer members, there are young people who are coming over, they're graduates, they're looking for opportunities, and they're looking for the everything that Britain can offer. But they are also finding themselves very lost in those first year or two. And being able to connect in with some of the Irish services, whether it's as volunteers or as users of services, but more likely those who are not so vulnerable, we have a level of vulnerability that needs to be met, and they need to do that through connecting in through cultural activities and centres.
Gerry McFlynn, some people would say if you're to emigrate, go to the UK. It's closer. We know it. It's a safer bet. But if you have problems, and if you social problems or learning problems or whatever, and if you don't have a support network, is there a danger that you could fall through the crevices?
Yes, there's a real danger. I think those the people who are successful and do reasonably well here are those who have a good, strong support network. And I certainly wouldn't advise anyone to come here unless they have a support network of some kind.
And is there a high rate of crime then if you do fall into problems, if you fall into money problems, or if you become homeless, do people resort to crime?
Well, there's always that danger anyway. I mean, some of the young people we find in the prisons are people who've left Ireland for a variety of reasons. Some have come from dysfunctional family backgrounds that are trying to get away from others, or been involved in the gangs with the drugs, and they're trying to break away from all of that and maybe make a fresh start here. But if they don't have the proper connections and if they don't have a network of support here, there's every chance that they'll fall by the wayside. Irish prisoners now constitute the second largest ethnic group in the prison system, only marginally behind Polish prisoners. That's not something to be proud of or something to boast about, but it's a reality.
Is it a difficult issue, Gerry, to push politically? Because it's there aren't many votes in pushing better conditions for prisoners or better conditions for prisons generally.
No, it's not a sexy subject at all. And I think with the election coming up next year, it'll probably not be in the top 50 issues on anybody's shopping list of concerns. The prison system at the present time is particularly difficult, not just for Irish prisoners, but for prisoners per se. There are a number of things fitting into it that make it difficult at the present time. The new configuration of prisons up and down the country, the privatisation of so many of the prisons. Also, in particular, and this is going to impact seriously on all prisoners, and in particular Irish prisoners, from the 1st of April, no legal aid will be freely available to prisoners.
And that's a major issue.
And then there's also, that's going to be a major issue. And then from October next, there's going to be the situation affecting the probation service. Two-thirds of the probation service is going to be privatised, hived off to private companies. The impact of all of this is going to be quite something on Irish prisoners, because nearly 40% of Irish prisoners in England and Wales at the present time come from a traveller background. Many of them have learning difficulties, and many of them have all sorts of problems which make it very, very difficult to cope with the prison system. And anyone who knows the prison system knows that it runs on paper. So anybody with learning difficulties is at a serious disadvantage from the word go.
Alan, that's something you've heard before, I'm sure.
Absolutely. There's no money in prisoners, you know, in that sense. But I've seen, it's the most horrendous thing I've done is when you ring a parent to say, look, your son or daughter is in prison. And even neighbours don't talk to you. One case where even the local Vincent de Paul wouldn't help a person and that's before even the person went to court to see if they were guilty or not. But it's just go back to what Jenny said. Colin McCann's book, Let the Great World Spin, said, faraway cities are built to teach us about home. And, you know, the whole thing of human mobility now is trying to keep the fact that the market can't keep up with people moving. And it's to try and hold on to human dignity in it all. And I think that's what the church is trying to do in the whole process. And people do crave identity when they're abroad. They don't realise who they are until they go abroad. And a student from abroad said to me today, I says, what would you say to people who are leaving your country to come here now? She said, I'd tell them to forget everything they thought they knew.
Let's go to our texters. A texter says 3,500 off the live register, not for jobs at home, but left for Canada. And that's apropos the visas that were issued this evening. And Sinead in Galway says, good evening. I immigrated to London as an 18-year-old and have just returned to Ireland after 30 years. Falls Ruth at Ash. Most people I meet ask why. Immigration is heartbreaking and its legacy continues in a ripple effect through the generations, she says. For instance, I have left my adult children behind in London and Bristol. Kind of reverse emigrated them. More research is needed, she says. Joe?
Just to give a little piece of information to the 4,000 or so people who pressed the button tonight and set their course on Canada. We did a very short report on Irish people's experiences in Canada last year on working holiday visas. We asked them five basic questions. What would you tell people in relation to finding accommodation, employment, building a social life, and other useful pieces of information? The report's up on our website. It's called 101 Answers, after we asked the question, what is Canada like? And just to, if there's people out here tonight, have a look at it. There's some useful tips. You've got a big journey ahead. You need all the information.
And Jenny, very briefly, people thinking of emigrating to the UK, what advice would you give?
Well, think about accommodation, think about social networks, think about the profession or trade that you want to get into. I think we have these assumptions that young people and recent graduates are very savvy. They're on the internet, they're setting themselves up with job interviews and things. But when they get here, the reality is much bigger and the things they have to deal with and cope with are much more important. And that's reflected in the levels of anxiety that they are reporting to us, even those that we expect to come and to thrive.
Okay, well, immigration is such a multifaceted issue. I wanted to get to the issue of the undocumented immigrants to Ireland. And that was mentioned in the programme, but we didn't have time to flesh it out at all. And we didn't have time to flesh out an awful lot of issues. But my thanks to the panel we have here in studio, Father Alan Hilliard and Joe O'Brien, and to our guests also in the BBC in London, Jenny McShannon and Jerry McFlynn. And my thanks to you for listening and for texting. And finally, thanks to the team here as well. Donal O'Hurley, Pather Carney, Richie Byrne and Carolyn Dempsey, Sinewil Wimshe, Cormac O'Hara, Anocht, Bamadashirisht, Unchechtin, Shahogan, Akhajishin, Slonagaspan.